This segment is not exactly going into the vault. It's something I've been holding on to, even though I recorded it. Boy, at this point, it's been about 3 months ago. Made a trip to Dick Vermeil's house into the woods of Pennsylvania. We did a couple of TV pieces on Fox 2 about how Vermeil had built this log cabin in the early 80s. He was retired, wanted to live in Montana, ended up out there, and then got into TV, back into football, and lo and behold, going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame this weekend. And the interview is about living in the woods, how he chose that spot, how he built it with his own hands. This is a man's man. I mean, talk about Dick Vermeil's history. His dad owned an auto body shop in Calistoga, outside of Napa, wine country. He's the starting quarterback in high school, gets into coaching. He's a swim coach, then starts helping with football, and boom, it just starts happening for him. He's a young coach at UCLA nearly 50 years ago, and then gets the Eagles job, then goes to broadcasting. I mean, you know the Dick Vermeil resume. It's extensive. And now he's going into the Hall of Fame, and he's got some thoughts on that. One of my favorite parts of the interview is when he references that the folks in Canton told him they would give him a speechwriter. And for years, before he got back into football, after he retired, Dick Vermeil's been on the speaking circuit talking about leadership, building camaraderie, you name it. And he says, I spoke in front of the freaking U.S. Naval Academy. I've had crowds of 5,000 people. And the folks at the Pro Football Hall of Fame want me to have a speechwriter. They want a teleprompter. He said, No, I'm good. A lot of fun stories, including Kurt Warner walking through the woods on NFL Network to make the announcement to Vermeil. So this is our visit at his home, the ranch he talked about for so many years. What it meant to win a Super Bowl for the city of St. Louis, his regrets for folks in Kansas City, and I just can't say enough about the man, and I know much has been said, and maybe people get tired of hearing about it, but my wife, I'll use her as an example, doesn't care about sports, just doesn't follow it, doesn't care. We've been to a couple of events with Coach Vermeil over the last 5 to 10 years, and she loves Coach Vermeil. And we're going to be in Canton this weekend, and she's going to go with me. And again, never starstruck. It's not that. She just thinks he's like the greatest guy in the world. And he really is. During the pandemic, we did a Zoom. I said, how's business with the wine, Vermeil Wines? Great selection, vermeilwines.com. And he said, it's terrible, terrible. COVID shut us down. They were doing all their business with people walking in, visitors on, you know, foot traffic. It got shut down. He goes, we're losing our ass. That's part of the Zoom interview in 2020. About a month later, a case of wine shows up at the front door from Dick Vermeil. Thanks for having me on your show. I'm like, oh my God, the guy says he's losing his ass and he sends us wine. He really is a gem. And this is a fun interview about his whole career, how it started, the early days in Napa, meeting his wife Carol 65 years ago. Hope you'll enjoy it. It's presented, as always, by Triad Bank, neighborhood-friendly bank. So if you go to a bank and they're sort of rude, you're like, you guys have my money. Wouldn't you at least want to be nice to me? Triad Bank has figured it out, not only in terms of being friendly, but helping folks in St. Louis do more business, whether it's your home loan, your car loan, business loan. Talk to the folks at Triad Bank on Clayton Road in Frontenac, also now on Olive Road, just west of 270, on the web at Triad Banking. .com. Marie Davila, Senior Living, corner of Clayton and Wideman Road. Beautiful spot since 1960. Villa Estates, assisted living, whatever form of retirement living you're looking for, check out the fine folks at mariedavila.com. Take a virtual tour online. B&G, they are the best in the bricks. Tuck pointing, waterproofing, foundation repair, they can make that home look new again. It's sort of subtle. Like when the tuck pointing goes bad, you just say, well, that house looks a little old. It doesn't look right. And then they get the tuck pointing fixed and, hey, that house looks pretty sharp, pretty slick. It's not exactly like a haircut, but it's a do-over for your home, your chimney, your garage. There's so many brick buildings in St. Louis. Make sure you call B&G to make it look new again. BGTuckPointing.com, that's their website, 363- 0525 is the number to call, 314-363-0525. Get that free estimate for your brick home, your brick building. Maybe you're a business owner. Talk to my friend Rich Galati at B&G. Also, Appliance Discounters, theappliancediscounters.com. Real simple. Go to the website. Check out all the merchandise. See all the prices online. You can get into that search engine and just type General Electric. So many great rebates available from GE. Great combination of Appliance Discounters with General Electric. Get it delivered quickly. That's what Appliance Discounters is all about. There is no delay. What was that phrase we were saying? You know, the supply demand, supply chain issues. They've never had that because they have a giant warehouse in downtown St. Louis. So things are delivered quickly. Get the best deals at Appliance Discounters, a St. Louis success story. Their savings are your savings. And now my visit with the soon-to-be Hall of Fame football coach, Dick Vermeil. Coach, tell me why, I mean, why here? How did you end up here? The beautiful place. How did the Vermeils end up headquartered here?
Well, in 1982, when I left coaching, I wanted to move to Montana. I wanted to get away from crowds, people. I love hunting and fishing, and to get in that environment. And then from there, go back into coaching, but have a residence in Montana. And we actually had a realtor looking for us. And Carol wasn't very excited about it. And I knew if we did that, we'd be leaving two families that were living here, our two sons' families, within 10 miles of this property. And so we heard about this King Ranch property, 5,600-acre ranch. And we came out and took a look at it. And it was like $1,800 or $1,900 an acre, believe it or not, all deed restricted. The King Cattle Ranch people sold it to a group of 28 people that bought it and eased it and deed restricted it all. And they sold it off in parcels. We didn't buy. So we come back the next year, and I'm in broadcasting, and it's up to $3,500 an acre, and we buy 100 acres. And once we got that paid off, then we built this log home. Carol and I designed it. At that time, you know, in the late 80s, you couldn't get a custom-built log home in Pennsylvania. I was thinking about the one I was going to build in Montana. Mm-hmm. Instead, we'd build it here. But Vermont Log Home Company would cut the logs for us. All we had to do was provide the plans. So Carol and I drew up the plans, hired some local contractors, and worked for a full year. And I was in television. So in the off, you know, 16-week season, the rest of the season, I worked here every day and really enjoyed the involvement of building this home. And when I went back into coaching, we just locked it up, let the deer eat everything, and the boys checked on it from time to time. I'd come home for vacation, you know, usually for almost 4 weeks prior to training camp each year, and be here, come home maybe Easter vacation for a week, and kept it going. And fortunately, after I gave it all up, in January 1st, 2006, we came home permanently after we left the sheep. And it's our home, you know.
So when you say you helped build it, walk me through that. Were you lifting logs? Are you hammering? Are you drilling?
We did it
what
all.
What are you doing? How do you know how to do that?
This is like putting a Lincoln Log Home Company. You know those Lincoln Log kits?
Yeah.
Yeah, they had great big long spikes. And all these logs, they're 6 inches deep and about, it vary from 9 to 11 inches to 12 inches across. They vary all rough surface. And there's a groove on the top and the bottom of the other has the other groove with foam that goes down between them. You set the log in. It was all cut, computerized, and everything. They lay the log in, and then you drill and then drive big long spikes down in to connect it to the log below. And that's gradually you have a log home. The biggest problem was putting the big beam the length of the home. This 70 is 36 by 72. This house, and that to watch what these guys did without a hoy, you know. It was physically done with a small winch, but they knew what they were doing. Old-time building guys, and it was scary. Actually, it was so heavy, when they got it jacking and going up one log at a time, it pushed the jack through the temporary floor because the hardwood floor wasn't down, it was plywood, and it pushed the jack through the hardwood floor. It was a little scary. But everything else pretty simple. The hardest job probably was the electrician, you know, because you have to drill holes through the logs and you have to have a good plan. And I think today, The whole process of building a log home is much more sophisticated. And what they do with log homes, you just look at the log home magazines today, is unbelievable. But we're satisfied with this.
Was it a place to escape when you're with the Rams, the Chiefs, the chaos of the NFL? Was this your place to kind of hide for a minute?
Oh, no question. Yeah, and we have established some friends here in the neighborhood. And, you know, it just the outdoors. You know, I've got three chainsaws and a tractor and an off-road vehicle. What else do I need? You know, and 11 grandchildren at one time around here. Now some of them are in California, and the kids are, the youngest one's now 23 years old, so they're spread out. But we have one grandson that's here three times a week. As soon as he gets off work, he's out here working on his tree stands or firing his shotgun or his rifle or his bow or something. So it's a great gathering place. I've had a lot of our players here, both from the Rams and the Chiefs and the Eagles, a lot of guys here. So I've had a charity golf tournament about 20 miles from here for 27 years, and a lot of guys used to come in for it. I gave it up during the pandemic. It was scheduled, then it had to be canceled, and then I decided to stop having it because I found out, you know, 40, 50 players traveling from all over the country to come in, and they were glad the pandemic, they didn't have to play golf, and a lot of them couldn't play anymore,
right.
You know, so we gave that up. But a lot of guys have been here, you know, a lot of guys.
So is it kind of like growing up in Napa, like in the country? Like, is that what the vibe is? Is that what you were going for?
Oh, yeah. You got to drive 7 miles to get to a grocery store, you know, and you go 12 miles in the other direction. And sometimes a little nerve-wracking when you're low on gas and you're trying to get to the closest gas station and it's 8 miles away and you're not sure if you're going to make it. But it's a great, great atmosphere. And Carol and I came up with this thought in that when we're on vacation somewhere and staying in a summer cabin or on a lake or on a stream or on a, God, what a great feeling it gives you. So when we decided to build a home on this property, we brought that feeling with us to build this home. And we designed it ourselves. Carol always felt in entertaining our coaches and our athletes that she was always in the kitchen. She said, when we build our own house, the kitchen, I'm going to be part of the party. So there's the kitchen and here's the great room. The only thing we took with us when we went back in coaching was the great big table there that opens up. We'll seat 18 to 20 people. Now, if you get big offensive linemen, it won't seat as many. And those chairs have all been glued together about three times because you put a 300-pounder in those dainty chairs, they crack them. They lean back and you can hear them pop, pop.
So would it literally kind of clear your head on those coaching days?
No question. Yeah.
And you just kind of like look out at the rolling hills and say, man, I don't miss the sideline right now. Like,
we can eat on that porch. We can eat on that porch. I got a great barbecue over there. I got into from St. Louis and Kansas City into the smoke deal and that kind of stuff. And I really enjoy that part. There's nothing better than sitting out here at 5 o'clock when it isn't hot and humid with your cocktail or your glass of wine and visiting with friends or neighbors dropping in. And, no, it is. We're very, very fortunate. That's one reason we stayed. First off, it was paid for. I couldn't buy the property today. It was paid for. Our kids now own it, okay, because it's, you know, at our age. And then our children own the place. And now we theoretically rent it from them. But, it's a great escape, but it's still real. You know, you don't forget anything when you come here. But you're relaxing, you're thinking, you know. And I would work on training camp practice schedules here and that kind of stuff. In fact, I'm just putting one together to send for my exhibition. They have a little area in the Hall of Fame for the inductees going in. And part of that, some of that I did here in the summer, you know.
How nostalgic have you been? Because Canton is a lot about memorabilia and former players and getting everybody back together. Has it, and you're already a person who reflects, I know that, has it been even more reflection and nostalgia?
It really has. You know, it's a double-edged sword. You've got so many names and numbers, emails to collect. So you get a phone number, so you call, and all of a sudden you're having a conversation with a kid you coached 20 years ago, and you find out what he's doing, the kids, what their kids are doing. He's in college. Oh, we got, you know, it's amazing. It's been really fun, and also great to see how so many of them are doing so well. You know, we always hear about the guy that has trouble and these kind of stuff, but a high percentage of them are doing well. Some are in coaching, you know, and some are successful in business. And I'm going to have Ron Jaworski, Kurt Warner, and Trent Green stand with Carol when they put on my gold jacket, because they really, the guy's responsible. And I'm having John Shira be with Carl Peterson when I'm presented, when they take the cloth off the bust. John Shira, who was the most valuable player in the Rose Bowl and stimulated an owner in Philadelphia to call up, talk to me about being the head coach of the Eagles. I want them involved because they're so responsible, you know.
And I know you played football. Did you ever think your life was going to be in football and coaching?
I hoped it was once I got going. I hoped that, you know, I really, high school coach, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the football so much more than I did teaching physical education or freshman English or civics and these kind of things. I wasn't very good because my mind was always on football. And I had the opportunity to coach the swimming team for 3 years too, which I really learned a lot about coaching kids and working with individuals collectively. And a few of them are going to be at the Hall of Fame. I got six guys coming off my high school all-star championship team in 1960. Wow. Showing up. And I learned a lot of doing it, but what I really loved was the football. So every time I got an opportunity to go more football and less classroom or less PE classes, I took it. And that's how I ended up in college, where it was all football, you know, and then on into pro football.
Where do you think you got your leadership skills from? Charlie Army, your good friend, he was with Parcells, Forrest Gregg, he was with a lot of NFL people, and he said nobody cultivated the team aspect like Coach Vermeil. Yeah. Where did that come from?
Well, I think part of it's your own profile as a person, how you were raised. I was raised in a town of 1,800 people. Everybody was your friend. Every good friend I had, his dad was my second dad. His mother was my second mother, you know, and we shared. The family thing was always been critically important. And I think high school coaching, though, and when I look at my whole career now, I don't think I ever stopped being a high school football coach. And sometimes I find myself, you know, I hear people say, well, I played for a coach. And that's a hell of a responsibility. When someone says he's playing for you and doesn't say, I'm playing for the Eagles, I'm playing for Vermeil, I'm playing for the Rams, I'm playing for Vermeil. And I hear it, and that's a responsibility. But I think the feeling of that all came from high school coaching. You know, they're all bigger and faster and make a lot of money in pro football, but they're all still kids. And they appreciate being treated properly. Yeah.
Do you have any regrets from the career? I mean, you've done so many. You do?
Yeah, I regret not doing a good enough job in Kansas City to hand Lamar Hunt the Lamar Hunt Trophy. Lamar Hunt was a gem. Maybe no equal as an owner, other than maybe the Rooneys. I don't know if there's another equal to him. Well, Wade was a great, what a wonderful, humble human being. And he and I had a real fine relationship, which I cherish. But I didn't do a good enough job to hand him trophy. I'm sure glad Andy Reid's doing it, but poor Lamar's gone.
Yeah. Well, and you're not in the Hall of Fame if you don't come out of broadcasting, if Georgia doesn't convince you to take the Rams job, and then you subsequently win a Super Bowl. If you don't win that Super Bowl, we're probably not talking about are we?
Yeah. Almost too much today is based for a Hall of Fame nomination and induction is based on winning the Super Bowl. You know, we've got Dan Reeves at 203 wins or 201 wins. Marty Schottenheimer, 203 wins. Eighth leading coach in the history of the NFL in win-loss. He's not in. He didn't win a Super Bowl. You know, I think that's wrong. And I'm going to be an advocate for those guys. God bless them. They're gone. You know, and we got Mike Holmgren, Mike Shanahan, Tom Coughlin, George Seifert. Those guys belong in the Hall of Fame. Every bit as much or more than I do. I got in, but now I'm going to be their advocate.
If you wouldn't have gotten in, how much does it change your life? Would you have been heartbroken? No. Disappointed, maybe?
You know, my theory, because I've been around guys that knew they were candidates but never got in, and they were always talked about it. They were a little bitter that they got robbed or cheated or they deserved it. My attitude was, if you deserve something, you get it. If you don't, you didn't deserve it, and move on. I just never... I've said this many times, sitting around that dinner table with the entire family, it's never been discussed, Hall of Fame Dick Vermeil, never. And that's why it's sort of overwhelming in the whole process today.
And didn't Kurt deliver the news, right?
Yeah.
Kurt, what
came
was
walking right up the store. Why he walked through the woods?
What was that like?
Oh, yeah. You know, I knew if they put a coach in, I was going in because I was the finalist. But they'd only put 10 coaches in the last 25 years. So it's not automatic. You got to get 80% of the 48 votes once you're the nominee. And obviously I got him because here comes Kurt Warner. I thought it was a UPS driver driving in because we have a driveway buzzer that alerts someone's driving in. That's who I thought it was. Carol knew they were coming. She knew it.
She didn't tell you.
No, she's good at keeping it a secret. I'm not. She's really good at it. But they showed up, and it's overwhelming. It really, you know, it makes it real. I knew I had a good chance. And Carl Peterson was my advocate, you know, and he talked to people. I had a lot of NFL coaches wrote real nice letters on my behalf, which is, you know, really rewarding. And when he came walking up there in his gold jacket, I said, oh, my God, it happened. Oh, my God. And then we came in here. They had 12 people, two cameras, like two microphones and all these broadcast assistants and all that kind of stuff. They were here for over an hour filming, and then they took off.
How are you going to condense the speech? You got a lot of friends.
You know, I've already voiced my opinion with the Hall of Fame people because we were there for 2 days a few weeks ago, and then we had a conference call last week. Got a conference call today. It isn't fair. If you're only representing one team, you can condense, but I'm representing three. I could spend 8 minutes on my three owners. I'm the only guy who coached three teams, never got fired. And I've got good relationships with all of them, you know. But you know, I will do what they want me to do. They want me to have a speechwriter. I said no. They want me to put on a teleprompter. I said no. The reason they want you to do that is then they can control the exact time you're on camera for the networks. This year it's at noontime rather than at evening time, which will make it nicer for parties after. But I know, I told them the other day, they asked me again, I said, no way. And I don't want your speechwriter. I said, I've spoken at the Naval Academy, student body, Air Force Academy, I've spoken in front of 5,000 people, I can handle this. And I don't want it on a teleprompter because even right now, I don't know what I'm gonna say. I lay awake almost every night when I wake up thinking about what I'm gonna say. And I'm gonna condense it into 8 minutes. It isn't fair, you know, for example. I can only have 150 people to the black tie. I mean, to the gold jacket awards event the night before. But a person that's only been on one team can have the same number. We got to balance that out, and I think gradually they will because I complain about it.
You think you'll be emotional, and you and I have talked about this.
Yeah.
Did that ever bother you? The people that say, "Oh, he's probably going to cry. He's probably going to get upset."
Oh yeah, I've heard that all my career.
Did you ever get sick of that?
Yeah. You know. One night I was sitting in that chair right behind you, and Barbara Walters was on 60 Minutes, and General Schwarzkopf was on there, and they interviewed him. And she talked to him about how intense and emotional he was. And you know, he made a statement. He said, you know, Barbara, he said, I don't worry about those guys that cry. I worry about those that don't. And then I looked him up and read what he was talking about. You know, there are many times I've embarrassed myself. Many times, but at this, I've learned to live with it. Is it a weakness? It is a strength. I don't know what it is, but it's a problem sometimes. I walk in stadiums and I hear, "Weaver Meal, why don't you cry for us today?" Oh, jeez.
How do you not give them the finger?
Oh, I would have done. I have. I've yelled back some obscenities.
Tell me about the connection. Like, the Eagle fans still love you. Rams fans love you. Chiefs fans. Tell me how you got that connection so strong with the cities and those fan bases.
Well, I had a radio show of my own on Monday nights on all three teams. The one that really helped me here in Philadelphia. I could answer the questions honestly, but we never screened a call. There were live questions and live answers.
And in Philly, look out.
Oh, yeah. And if I couldn't tell the truth, then I said, I'm sorry, I can't answer that. And I would tell the truth. Yeah, I screwed up. I shouldn't have done that, you know. And I also learned, and every coach that's asked me for advice, the first thing I tell them is never go in a press conference unprepared. Go prepared, even like in St. Louis, 2 years we were losing. I would go into those press conferences. I knew what they were going to ask me. So I would normally try to, in my presentation, answer all those questions. Then what do they ask? You know, they're a little more refined questions. Sometimes it stimulates even better questions. But I think it helped me communicate and connect with the fan that turns on the TV or listens to the radio or reads an article in the newspaper. Because I don't read any of the articles in the newspaper where I'm interviewed. I don't go back and watch interviews like we're doing now. And I just never have. John Wooden told me to stay away from that, and I took his advice, and I never have gotten involved in it.
And you would have been around Wooden at UCLA, right?
Oh, yeah.
Did you learn? I mean, you were a younger coach then. What did you learn from him?
A lot. You know, John Wooden could say more in fewer words than anybody I've ever been around. I can remember walking in there one day, second year there, after recruiting, sir, and I walked in, sit down, and said, John, got whipped by SC and a couple key guys. He looks at me, he says, Coach, he says, don't worry about the guys you lose. He says, just make sure you do the best job you can do of helping guys be the best they can be. He said, SC's always going to have better players than you. Beat them anyway. That's exactly what he said. And the other thing he said within conversations that relate to what I'm talking about, an NFL coach not getting the hall because of Super Bowls, he says, Coach, the win-loss records are not always on the positive side for the best coach. It normally starts with the best players. And he says, a lot of fine coaches still don't have great winning records. They did unbelievable jobs of coaching. Now, I can think of Bill Snyder at Kansas State, Tom Coughlin at Boston College. I'd go broadcast those games with Musburger and say, no way they're going to win with these guys, and they win anyway. Yeah. Great coaches. And John Wooden was telling me. Yeah.
And as you get nostalgic and you think about the Super Bowl win, the parade the next day, more of your players talk about the parade than the game. It's what do you remember from that 24-hour period?
Well, I remember landing and seeing the arch. God, that was, I mean, it brought tears to everybody in the plane. It was an unbelievable feeling.
Because you realized you brought it home at that point.
And we were giving something to the fans that they really deserved. Even though we'd only been there a few years and the Rams had only been there. But I coached against the St. Louis Cardinals 7 years in a row, you know. And so
he'd been through a lot of losing with the football Cardinals too. Yeah,
right. So it gave me a really emotional feeling that we're doing something great for the community, you know. And the parade, what startled me in the parade, and I've got a picture of Carol and I sitting on that big carriage, is looking down and seeing a woman in a fur coat standing next to a lady that might be living on the street, you know, from all levels of socioeconomic backgrounds. And they were all on the same page at that time. And they were all in the same emotion at that time. And that was a tremendous feeling, to be able to bring a community together like that team did, especially that night. And it was colder than hell. Remember that?
Yes.
But I'll never forget looking down and riding along and seeing the different socioeconomic groups represented as a city of St. Louis.
Yeah. Tell me about Carol. She's been part of this journey since day one. When you first met, you say high school, were you freshman, sophomore, junior?
Sophomores. Yeah.
And been together ever since.
65 years, yeah. And she has no equal. There is no equal. You know, they're starting to put women in Major League Baseball, officiating football games. Someday they're going to put a woman in the Hall of Fame. She'll be the first one to go in. All you have to do is ask my players. All you have to do is ask my coaches. She's fed most of them. She sat with wives who are having problems with her husbands. She sat with husbands who are having problems with their wives. And she's been to hospitals and see kids that are injured. And she's been involved in my whole career. And that's why we took that table with us. Because that's how we did it in high school. That's how we did it in junior college. That's how we did it at UCLA. I've got three albums of pictures of meals in our house and parties with our kids that I'm going to put in our exhibition at the Hall of Fame. But it all centers around her. And it also helped in the tough time because she lived and died with every game too, because she was emotionally involved with my job. You know, I think, you know, I have daughter-in-laws, and I see my own daughter now. Women are a little bit different in the society today. You could ask Carol, but I always felt she was like an assistant coach, and she was involved in the job. You know, she was part of it. And when we lost, she'd be upset, crying on the bus, and we'd win, she'd be crying because we won. You know, so it's a unbelievable support staff. I don't think a coach in the NFL could coach without a wife that's truly supportive. Truly supportive. It's tough.
And I read the story that the best job you ever had, you turned down. Tell me the Tampa Bay call you got. This would have been what, after the 87?
Hugh Culverhouse. Yeah. Hugh, that was in January of like
It was after the 87 season, right?
Yeah, it was, I don't know, but it was, he called me up, he traced me. He had read in the paper that I was considering going to the Atlanta Falcons, which I was. And I asked the Falcons to give me a week to think about it, that I was going to California, spend some time with my father who had pancreatic cancer and he didn't have long to live. So I went out there, and by like the fifth day out there, I get a call from Hugh Culverhouse. He had heard that I might take the Atlanta Falcon job. And he said, I knew him because he was close to Leonard Toast, the owner of the Eagles. And he said, Dick, I understand that you're going back into coaching. I said, no, I said I would think about it. And he said, well, before you make a decision to go to Atlanta, he says, I would like you to come coach my team and you can write your own contract. He said, I have more money. He said, I have more money than I can spend in lifetime and my kids' lifetime and everything. He said, and I'm tired of losing and I think you could help me win here. You write your own contract. That's exactly what he said to me. Thank you, Mr. Cole. I said, I'll think about it and I'll call you back. And I went, sat down next to my dad, and he was really struggling. And I told him what happened. And he said, Dick, do you need the aggravation? And I said, no. Then he said, I don't think you better take the job. Good advice. I wasn't ready for the aggravation. But you can only turn so many jobs down. And I had turned the Rams down before. And because I had a relationship with Georgia. She knew me as a young coach. I knew her. Her husband one time told me, if you were older, you'd be my head coach. You know, if you had more experience and more mature, you'd be my head coach. Carol Rosenblum told me that a long time ago.
When you were an assistant with the Rams.
Yeah. Yeah, I was an assistant for him 1 year or 2 years, something like that. But anyway, so when John Shaw called me. He
didn't tell you you could fill out your own contract, though, did he?
No.
John,
I never had an agent. I never had an agent. And probably not a great thing, but you know, I never wanted anybody between me and the owner. You know, if the owner wanted to talk to me, talk to me. If I wanted to talk to the owner, I would talk to him or her. And so I never had a problem with them. But I enjoyed my ownership. I enjoyed my management teams. We didn't always agree, but I respected them. And we had, you know, I didn't have some agent telling them something and me something. And not that it's wrong, it's just that I didn't believe in that concept. If I was to do it over, I'd probably have an agent today. Yeah.
And do you think the kid from the Napa area, you were kind of in the country, that's the life you're living now, right? Are you the same guy, you think? I mean, you've had a great journey, but you learned along the way.
Well, some kids I went to high school have been here. Okay. So, yeah, you know, I was spoiled in that environment. You know, you could get up and leave the house at 7 o'clock in the morning with your shotgun across the handlebars, ride to the mountains with a mile away, spend all day, come back at dark, eat dinner, and go to bed. You know, today if I rode down the main street of Calistoga with my shotgun and my handlebars, I'd get arrested. You know, but we all grew up that way. You know, it was just totally, you know, 130 kids in the school. We grew up that way, and I love that environment and that atmosphere, you know, and now I mean, this is like heaven out here. I'm not sure what heaven really looks like, but I think I'm close right here, Chester County.
I would say my only regret about this interview is I had to leave and drive to the airport in Philly and get on a plane and head back. I could have sat on the porch with Coach and his wife Carol and the dog and looked out at the deer and maybe had some Vermeil wine and told stories for hours. He's met so many fascinating people, connected to so many people. I like the visual of him making his invite list for the Hall of Fame, getting everyone's email, and then getting their phone number. Next thing you know, he's on the phone. He probably talks to every player, former executive. And knowing Dick Vermeil, he probably talked to each one for like 2 hours. So I'm sure it's been a process leading up to this, but looking forward to being there this weekend. I think what we'll do next week on the podcast is share some stories, running down folks, even like a John Shaw, who is the team president. He was a guest of this show about a year and a half ago, longtime Rams president. But maybe we dig in a little bit on his visit, somewhat famous now, after the 98 season. The Rams have gone 4-12, things are going sideways. And Vermeil tells John Shaw, we're going to be good next year. I think we're about to break through. We're going to be good. Now, that's before they drafted Torrey Holt, before they went after Trent Green and Adam Timmerman and traded for Marshall Faulk. But Vermeil was saying, we're going to be good. And John Shaw says, oh, my God, Dick, I've been hearing that for years. Why? I don't know why I should believe you. They hung with Vermeil for that third year, ended up being a magical season. I'd love to get John Shaw's honest take on how that conversation went down. So that could be coming our way next week. We'll certainly talk to a number of different folks. You know, last year when we went to Canton, Isaac Bruce was going into the hall and saw people like Toby Wright, somebody I hadn't seen in years. Looked great, like he could still clobber you on the football field. But it's just so much fun to see these. The Rams are gone. Stan Kroenke's a four-letter word. Screw him. All of that is true. And there were a lot of losing, crappy teams. But there were some good times weaved in there. And for me, having spent a lot of time out at Rams Park, a lot of good people. A lot of good people that I'd met over the years and look forward to seeing some of them in Canton. Thanks for checking out the Kilcoin Conversation. Always available at scoopswithdannymac.com. iTunes, Spotify, you know how we do it. It's available wherever you get your podcast. I hate when people say that. Wherever you get your podcast. Although I guess it makes sense. I'm just tired of hearing it. Thanks for listening, and thanks to our great sponsors, B&G Tuck Pointing, the best in the bricks for that estimate on your home. Want to make your bricks look new again? Call Rich Galati, 363-0525, 314-363-0525. The reason they're the best in the bricks is because they've been doing this for a while. They've got a great team, and he just knows tuck pointing. He'll tell you that when you talk to him. He'll explain how this process works. Waterproofing, that's another layer of what they do. Foundation repair, all of that. Some of the great examples of before and after can be found at bgtuckpointing.com. Check them out. Appliance Discounters for your next appliance or your service repairs. Appliance Discounters has an incredible service team. Call them up. It's not an 800 number. Call them up. Get the service scheduled quickly instead of waiting weeks for that broken appliance. TheAppliancedIscounters.com, the website, more than a decade now. Probably looking at about 15 years now since they started this. It's a St. Louis success story. All of the appliances have the price tag where they look at the big box stores, they compare the price, and they put it on there for you so you know exactly what you'd be charged around town. TheAppliancedIscounters.com. Triad Bank, St. Louis original. Since 2005, the CEO, Jim Regna, went to Rosary. He went to UMSL. It's about as St. Louis as it gets. He was in the regulatory business. He knows banking. Started up Triad Bank with some fine folks. And look at him now. Again, kind of like Appliance Discounters, a St. Louis success story. People have figured it out. If you're going to do business with a bank, you want to do business with somebody based here, not calling somebody in New York or Chicago. It's right here in town. TriadBanking.com is their website. And Marie Davila Senior Living, I always encourage folks, just take the virtual tour. Just go to the website. I probably say it, MarieDavila.com, and people will go, how do you spell that? I probably don't say it enough. MarieDevilla, MarieDavila.com, assisted living, Villa Estates, that's what Red Shandian's had. It's basically your own home, but you're on the campus. You have access to the facilities, great food. That's part of the Villa Estates experience at MarieDavila.com. I'm Martin Kilcoin. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.